Okay. So let's make a start. And so last week, what I was talking about, suppose I started to think about two key, or the one main concept we talked about last week was the idea of distance measures in a high-dimensional space. And the sort of high-dimensional space that we started to use as an example, and it's just an example, but it's a kind of interesting example, was this idea of recommender systems. So you're all familiar with them. You kind of use an online retailer, and it will make recommendations based on your purchasing or browsing history. And so what we want to have a look at is how we can construct a very simple recommender system. But it turns out these things can be quite powerful due to the beauty of big data. So what I want to do today is to talk about some notions of similarity and distance. So we looked at the end of last lecture, we looked at the idea of distance between feature vectors. So we have this notion of a feature vector. So in this case, a feature vector is something which expresses our knowledge about some kind of, about one of the entities in the system we're concerned about. In the case of a recommender system, we basically only have two types of entities. We have films and we have viewers of those films. So in our case, the viewers are the critics who have supplied ratings. And then the feature vectors are based entirely on those ratings. So we can express the feature vector for a particular critic, for a particular viewer, in terms of the ratings that viewer gave to the movies that they've watched. And then we have this notion that you may be similar to somebody who you may have a similar location in this movie space if you've got similar ratings to somebody else. So we have this idea of review space, and we're going to look at how we can have. So we looked at distance measures. We'll see a simple and to be frank, rather ad hoc way of looking at similarity in this review space, just based on Euclidean distance, which you're very familiar with. And we'll look at that at how we can build a really simple recommender system. So if you're a new user and you've expressed some preferences, and there's lots and lots of previous users and we know about their preferences, how can we build a simple recommender system based on that? And then at the end of the lecture, I want to look at another way of measuring similarity. So rather than looking at distances in review space, we're basically going to look to see, look at a correlation-based approach to go and see if the scores you give tend to sort of have the same shape across movies as the score of the person you're comparing with. So that's the three things we're going to look at today. So just to remind you, this is the data we're looking at. So we have these six critics, each row corresponds to a critic's score, and the number in each cell corresponds, so this number 7 says that critic Turan gave a score of 7 for the movie Australia. So that's the space that we're working in. So then in this review space, we can say, well, the feature vector for Turan, so each critic has a six-dimensional feature vector in this particular case, because we've got six movies. For critic Turan, the feature vector is the six-dimensional object, 7, 7, 8, 4, 7, 8. And we just treat this as a point in this six-dimensional space. Like I said before, it's really just a kind of coincidence that we happen to have as many, the same number of critics as we do films. If you were, I guess if you were running a real online site, online retailer, whatever, I guess you would not be being very successful if you didn't have many more users than you had films or products, I guess. Depends what you do, actually. That's there's an interesting conversation to be had there, right? In terms of if your specialty is sourcing kind of unique things for people and so on. But anyway, let's say that we would normally expect there to be many more users than there are films in this case. So that's the data. And so we had this notion of review space, and it's really a six-dimensional review space, but it's easier just to show on display a two-dimensional review space. So this is how the critics are positioned in these two dimensions, where the X dimension in this case is given by what their rating was for Hancock, and the Y dimension is given by what their rating was for the film Revolutionary Road. And we can see that they're kind of spread out a bit along here. So we kind of have Morgan Stern towards the bottom left, didn't really like either of them, particularly didn't like Hancock, and Travers towards the top right, who seemed to like both of them, and so on. So we go and have these six data points in this review space, and then we have a new user who comes along. And what our real goal is going to be is, well, can we make some predictions about what this user will like? What can we recommend for this user? What film can we recommend this user to rent or to buy? And the way we're going to do that is based on the similarity of this user compared with all the other users that we have. So what we're doing here is we're making a prediction over unseen films for this user. So if you remember the data that we looked at for user two, we only had ratings from that person for three films, and we'd like to make predictions about how they're going to rate the three films that they haven't seen. And the information we have to make this prediction are the ratings supplied by the users in the system, by the six critics who have seen these additional three movies. So one thing we could do is to immediately see, well, which of the critics are similar to user two. And one way to do that is so working in this three-dimensional space is to look at the Euclidean distance between each of the critics for those three films and user two. And you can see in this case user two is similar to the critic Claudia Puig with a distance of root 5 and is rather distant from the critic David Denby who's got a distance of root 27, 5.2. So a very simple thing then would be to say, well, let's just assume that user two behaves like Puig, and let's just assign the ratings of that critic to user two. This isn't a great thing to do for a couple of reasons. For one reason, in this case, Puig is the closest, 2.2, but actually this user is pretty close to Turan, 2.4. And if you imagine that imagine that your website is very successful, say you're Netflix or somebody, and you've got lots of ratings from lots of users, then you would expect when a new user comes along that there won't just be one user who's clearly the closest to them. They might be close to quite a lot of users. And in fact, what we'd like to do is try and use all the information that we have. So if we just made predictions about what user two would like based on Claudia Puig, that's okay. We're using some data to make those predictions. It's better than just guessing. But what would be better still would be to integrate all our data. So integrate the data from all six of them. And one way to do that would be to weight this data dependent on how similar it is. So you want to give the most weight, we assume, to Puig because this person is closest to user two, and I guess the least weight to Denby because that person is he's the critic who's farthest from user two. So you'd like to somehow kind of have a solution where we estimate the scores for user two for the other three movies, which I think are Australia and another two. So we want to estimate the score for those movies based on a weighted sum of the data we do have, giving highest weights to the closest ones and lowest weights to the things further away. Yeah.
Some critics are using more scale from 5 to 10, some critics are using the whole scale, and maybe the information some films are better rated than the other ones, and maybe there's some pattern to that.
So the first thing you said, we're going to make use of, wait 20 minutes or something. So I guess what you were saying was, so maybe you weren't saying this, but I think what you were saying is you want to make use of the information that, I don't know, I think Travers always tends to rate really highly. So he tends to like give scores of 7, 8, or 9. Whereas I don't know, Denby is a little bit more prudent in his ratings and tends to score 4, 5, or 6. But actually, they may have very similar tastes. It's just that Travers kind of gives higher scores, and yeah, let's go for it. Absolutely, and wait a few slides, and we'll see how to deal with that. And that's a big problem with Euclidean distance, right? Because you've got this. You can think of it as like there's this permanent offset between a high-scoring guy and a low-scoring guy. And although they have very similar tastes, there's always this kind of penalty. And it's nothing to do with the movies, it's to do with the guys. And you'd kind of like to normalize this away. So you want to normalize the critics. You want to normalize the critic scores away so that we're just looking at what the information we're getting from the movies, and we're trying to get rid of what information we know about the critics. So yeah, absolutely. And when I say guys, I'm using it in a sex non-specific way, incidentally. Okay, but before we get on to that, we're going to stick around in Euclidean space for a while. And I'm saying we want to wait, so we give the most weight to the things that are the most similar. What we've actually got here are distances, so it's a measure of dissimilarity. So we'd like to kind of go from this to a measure of similarity. And one way to do this, so I don't think there's a particularly good way to do this, but one way to do this is to go and define a similarity function like this. So we're going to define the similarity between two vectors, x and y, as basically this reciprocal of the distance between x and y plus 1, and we take the reciprocal of that. So if we look at that function, you can see it has the right sort of behavior. So if the distance, if x and y are in fact the same point, they'll have a distance of 0. And so that's going to have a value of 1. So that's the most similar two things can be, and that's good. And you can see there, that's the reason that we need to go and have something like 1. We need to have the plus 1 in the denominator to stop things kind of shooting off to infinity if you do get a 0 distance. If you get things that are infinitely far away, so if we say that the distance between x and y is in fact infinity, these two points are as far away as they can possibly be, then you're looking at 1 over 1 plus infinity, which will be 0. So it gives us the right limiting behavior. When the points are identical, you get a similarity of 1, and when the points are infinitely far apart, you get a similarity of 0. And it's sort of cheap and easy to compute. I guess some of the problems with this is that it will tend to, is that you know, a distance of 1 will give you a half, a distance of 2 will give you a third, so you're very quickly kind of just using, you're not using the entire space between 0 and 1. So depending on the scale of your vectors, the similarities might be compressed into, if your vectors are high dimensional, so the Euclidean distance between them tends to be quite large, then you might find that everything's working in the kind of lower reaches of the 0 to 1 area, and you might find things get a bit compressed. So if we go and look at what happens if we take the Euclidean distances from the last slide, and we just transform them using the similarity measure, then we get some numbers for similarity to use a 2. So of course the most similar is Claire Dupuig, who's on 0.31, and the least similar is David Denby, who's on 0.16. If there's any, what the meaning of these numbers is kind of moot. It's really just a kind of, it's almost an artificial transformation to getting things into 0, 1, but it has the right kind of behavior. So what we've done then is we've got this idea of review space, and we now have this way of measuring similarities between two points in review space. And a point in review space is a user, it's a critic, it's a user, and it's defined by the ratings for the films that make up the dimensions of the review space. So in this case, we have a three-dimensional review space. It's the three movies that they've all looked at: Body of Lies, Burn After Reading, and Revolutionary Road. So given we can make similarities in review space, we'd now like to go and find a way to get a simple recommender system. And remember, what we want to do is we want to recommend what the ratings would be for User 2 for movies that User 2 hasn't seen but the other critics have seen. And we've got two pieces of information that we can use for this. One is the ratings of the critics for those movies, and secondly is the similarity of User 2 to those critics. So we can come straight away with it looks a lot worse than it is, this formula. With this formula, to go and get the score of what you think the predicted rating of User U will be for film Z. And the way we do this, so first, think in terms of the summation. What we've got in the summation, we've got a summation from 1 to big C. I goes from 1 to big C. And that's basically your summation over critics. We've got big C critics. So in that summation, we're basically just going to take the product of the score of critic I for the film we're interested in, which is Z, and then we take the similarity of the ith critic to the user we're interested in. So we've just got those two terms. We're just taking the product. So this is just a weighted summation of scores. If you didn't have that similarity term in it, you'd just be summing up the scores, and you'd assume that all critics give you equal information about what user U likes. We're saying we've got more information than this, and we're saying that the critics that are closer to user U, are most similar to user U, are the critics who are going to give us the most information, and we're going to formally do that just by putting this weighting term in. So basically, we've got this summation over scores, so we're summing over all the critics, and we're just taking a weighted sum of those scores. Now, what we then want to do is to go and is we just want to end up something which is a sort of equivalent scale to the score for a critic. If we weren't using the similarities to weight it, then we'd just use an average, right? We'd just go and sum up the scores for each of the critics and multiply by 1 over C, divide by C, which is the number of critics. And that would give us the average score of those critics for that film. And that's all very well, but we do have some extra information. The extra information is that we know what user U thought of three films that those critics have seen, so we're weighting it by these similarities, which means that the normalization term is going to have to change a little bit. Rather than it just being 1 over C, well, we're actually, each critic isn't weighted as 1. If it's on an identical position for those three films, then that critic will be weighted as 1. But actually, each critic is weighted as a similarity. So instead of having 1 over C, we go and have this function of 1 over the sum of the similarities of each critic to the user. So if each critic was identical to the user, then the similarities would be 1, and this summation would equal C, so we'll be back to the usual thing. But of course, they're not identical, so we're just summing over the similarities. So this thing is going to be sum to something less than or equal to C, and it's the correct normalization to make, because we're not taking fully multiplied by 1 each score. We're multiplying by something between 0 and 1. So we do that, and we get this normalized. We get this normalized score out, which is the score for the critic, which is a score for user U watching movie Z based on the critic's similarity and the critic's scores for that movie. Okay, so we can go ahead and do this for these three movies, Australia, Hancock, and Milk, which we don't have any information on for user U. And if you look in the notes, you can see an easy way to do it by hand. So if we which one do I want to go to? Board on. So basically, I mean, one way to do it by hand, if you look at what's in the notes, we go and have our critics, Denby, McCarthy, Morgenstern, Puig, Travers and Turan. And we'd go and take the score for each of those. So in that case, the score for Denby would be 0.16. And we've got them all and sum them up. And then for each movie, we can just go and take the score. So that's the similarity. We can take the score for that movie, whether it's 3. And we can do the sim by the score, 0.48. Easy stuff by hand. And you go and get, in this case, 7.63. And then you do the normalization. In this case, it's 7.63 over 1.33 to come up with a score of 5.7. Easy to do it by hand. Suggest you go away and spend 5 minutes or 15 minutes or however long it takes you to go and write a little Python program to do this. And it would be good practice for you. And that's basically a simple recommender system. There's some questions you can think about. What if everybody hasn't seen the same movies? Can we still compare distances and similarities if everybody hasn't seen the same movies? What we did in this case was just find those movies that everybody had seen. But if you've got a really large set of users and a large set of movies, what do you do? Because there'll always be some gaps. And there's actually no right answer, but there's various things which can make sense. And then there's a question that he just asked me, which is, what if some critics consistently rate more highly than others, or if they've got a wider spread than others? So you may get two critics who have the same average ratings. They both kind of have an average rating of 6 or something, but one only uses 4, 5, 6, whereas the other one uses the full spectrum from 0 to 10. And the second question is something that we're going to look at. You can also look at the transposed problem, and I mean very precisely that it's a transposed problem. So rather than comparing critics, we can compare items. So again, you get this on your kind of favourite books or movie site. When you choose an item, it can immediately go and tell you, well, what are similar items to that, and it can give you a list of similar items. Okay. So that's our data, and if you think of it as a transpose problem, so we just transpose the matrix, and this time we've got these feature vectors in rows. So we have a feature vector for Australia, which is something like 3, 7, 7, 5, 5, 7, and we have a feature vector for Body of Lies and so on. So we can do exactly the same thing now. We can compute the distances between films. So we see that if we look at Body of Lies, it's sort of it's closest to Burn After Reading and furthest, I guess, from Hancock, based on these users' ratings. Okay, so this is all. This is all kind of, I hope, reasonably makes sense. Any questions? Good. Okay. So this is taking the point of critics having different ratings. More in the focus, and if we look at Denby Travers space, then we can plot the kind of ratings for these 6 movies. So here we've changed our review space. Is that flickering light really annoying you at the back? I don't know if I can do anything about it. It's because I don't think it's controlled by these ones, is it? Maybe if I switched, that's probably bad. No. No, because it's not controlled by these, so. I don't think I can do much about it. Oh, wait, now if I do that. Okay, so if I have the lights, if we do it with the house lights up, this is medium, then it doesn't put the back lights on, and is that flickering stopped? Yeah, and you can still see the screen, right? Yeah, you can. So, let's try that. What was I talking about? Yeah, so we've got a different type of, so when we transpose the problem, we can now, we've got a review space where our dimensions are given by the reviewers, Denby and Travers, and the points are given by the films. And what we can see if we look at Denby and Travers is it's a good example of two critics who calibrate their scores differently. So we've got their scores. So each point says that. So that point says that Denby gave Australia a 4 and Travers gave it a 5, and so on. And if we draw a best fit straight line between these points, then it's kind of got a positive slope, so there's a reasonable positive correlation between those points. And I'll talk about what I mean by correlation in a moment, precisely. But what you can see is that Denby kind of seems to give a wider range of scores to Travers. So Travers, apart from Australia, which I guess in the world of Travers he really didn't like, tends to give films sort of 8, 9, 10, whereas Denby gives films, you know, 4, 5, and you know he will go higher, but he's got a. There's two issues here. One is that Travers will have a higher average score than Denby, and the second thing is that Denby has a bit more spread to the scores than Travers. And we'd like to deal with both of those things. We'd like to deal with both of those things so we can get a better similarity measure. As another example, we can look at the Denby-McCarthy space, and these guys are actually pretty. This is the example of two critics who are pretty uncorrelated. The best straight line fit, which quite frankly is not a very good fit, right? It doesn't go close to any of the points. Is in fact slightly negative, which basically implies that as Denby's score gets higher, which basically is telling you Denby's score gets higher, so McCarthy's score gets a little bit lower. These two are negatively correlated. So we might want to use this idea of correlation as a way of estimating similarities between critics, and it's an interesting measure as well because in addition. Whereas the similarity based on the Euclidean distance was going from 0 to 1, if we use correlation, it's going to be going from plus 1 to minus 1. So if you took a weighted sum based on correlation, you could have both positive inputs from people who are well correlated with you, but you could actually have negative inputs. So you know what this is telling you is that if you're McCarthy and Denby like something, then that's actually some sort of evidence against that you'll like it, so it's actually giving you a negative term towards a film that Denby likes. So to do this, we want to estimate our correlation, and we want to get rid of these critic effects. So we're just looking at the film effects, and a way to do this is to transform the scores so that everybody has the same mean score and the same standard deviation or the same variance. So remember, sort of, it's always worth remembering visually, if you like, have a feeling for what mean and variance are telling you about. So mean you can think of as a location parameter. It's if you kind of have to have one point which says something about the score somebody gives, that's the mean. So if you look at people who've got different means, I don't know the numbers. If Denby has a mean of 5 and Travers has a mean of 8, it's telling you something about the way they calibrate themselves and the way they give the scores. So you can think of the mean as a kind of location parameter as giving you a point, in this case along the score line. And you can think of the standard deviation as a dispersion parameter. So it's telling you how dispersed the scores are. So if you've got something with quite a small standard deviation, it says that the scores are quite close together and there isn't much variation, there isn't much dispersion in the scores. As it gets larger, then the variance is telling you that the scores are quite dispersed. And we'd like to normalize for both of these, because if we're making this kind of weighted similarity, weighted score measure to make recommendations, we just want recommendations based on the films. We don't want recommendations based on the information about the users. So when I get a recommendation, I just want the recommendation to kind of basically factor away all the things about the people making the recommendations. I just want to get the information, as much information as I can about the films. So the way we can do this is by normalizing everybody's score. And the way we normalize the score is so if the initial score, and apologies for this kind of all these I's and J's, if the initial score so we've got critic I is giving a score for film J. And if the initial score was X, so this superscript means that it's X belonging to critic I, and the subscript means it's for film J. That's the original score we got. That's the raw data in the matrix. And then we're going to transform that score to a normalized score. And these normalized scores we're going to normalize these scores such that for each critic, the set of normalized scores will have a mean of 0 and a standard deviation of 1. So this means that we've kind of gotten rid of all this kind of location and dispersion information about the critics. We've gotten rid of, at least in terms of mean and variance, we've gotten rid of this information about how does a critic calibrate themselves, what's their average score, how much variation do they have in their scores. And the way we do that is by computing these normalized scores. So if you want to adjust data to have a mean of 0, it's really straightforward. So the mean is a location parameter, which means that the natural thing to do with it is to sort of add it or subtract it. So if you subtract the mean from each, computed over all the scores, the sample mean computed over all the scores, if you subtract that from each individual score, then you're going to result in a set of scores that have a mean of 0. But that doesn't do anything about the dispersion. It basically just kind of shifts things along the line. So everybody's sort of centered at the same point. But we might have started off with scores that look something. One person's scores might have looked like that, and the other person's scores, I don't know, might have looked something like that. If we kind of shift them to have the same mean, then I can use three colors here. If we shift them to have the same mean, then you might get the normalized scores looking like that for one guy and like that for the other guy. So if we just normalize by the mean, then the mean's the same, but we still haven't gotten rid of all the information about the users we can get rid of easily because the dispersions are different. So to normalize to the dispersion, we just divide by the standard deviation. So dividing by the standard deviation means that everybody's going to end up with a standard deviation of 1. So that means that if we do that, then we'll kind of normalize our data to kind of look something like that for that guy, and I don't know, like that for the other guy. So they're both supposed to have the same, the data points aren't the same, but they've got the same mean and the same standard deviation. So we've basically, by doing this normalization, we've factored away the information which tells you something about the critic. Once we've done this normalization, and you go and end up with normalized scores looking like that, you can no longer say that Denby tends to score lower than Travers. You can no longer say that Denby tends to have a greater dispersion of scores than Travers, because we've removed that information by doing this normalization to zero mean and unit variance. So that's good, because we've taken away this critic-specific information, and hopefully we're just left with information to do with the films. And then what we want to do is we want to get a correlation between the scores of two critics. So we're doing that here, and so we've got two critics H and I, and we're basically, the basic way we're going to define the correlation is by taking a sum of the product of their normalized scores for film J, summed over all n films we see. So if we go and look at this correlation, I've got to apologize, I've just fixed it on the web, but in the notes it talks about, rather than talking about ZH and ZI, it talks about X and Y. So you kind of need to kind of map the symbols. So if you, this is under equation 2.10. If you look at the paragraph there, the X and X sub J should be this ZH sub J, and Y sub J should be this ZI thing. And if you look on the web, the correct version is now there. So we've got this definition of correlation. So you can think of what's going on with correlation. We go and look at these normalized scores. If the score for H and the score for I tend to be big together and tend to be small together, then this thing is going to then you're going to get large products. Whereas if they and remember ZI can be positive and negative. So if they're both strongly negative, you get a positive number, and if they're both strongly positive, you get a positive number. But if one tends to be positive and one tends to be negative, then you're going to get negative numbers. So that's going to push you towards negative correlation. And in both cases, like in the standard deviation, we're normalizing over using this 1 over n minus 1. It's not a big deal whether you normalize by 1 over n or 1 over n minus 1, but you do get better estimates if you normalize by 1 over n minus 1. Let me actually basically give you a kind of one-line idea for why that's true, and I think it comes up in one of the tutorials actually. But basically, the reason you're normalizing by n minus 1 here is so n is the number of data points, but you're normalizing by one less than the number of data points, and it's essentially because you've already used information from the data points in computing the mean. So if you normalize by 1 over n, you'll get what's called a biased estimate, and a biased estimate means that it will consistently give you, in this case, an underestimate of the variance. Not to worry about it, but that's the issue with this normalization by 1 over n minus 1 and 1 over n. So that's basically the Pearson correlation coefficient. If we go back to these two things, if we compute the Pearson correlation coefficient for Denby and Travers, then we go and get a correlation of 0.76. And if you compute it for Denby and McCarthy, then the correlation turns out to be minus 0.12. And when you come to do the first tutorial on this side of the course, then one of the questions, which again I think is really worth doing, and you can explore this stuff because we're dealing with data, so it's much easier to explore it when you're writing little computer programs to process it. Is just asking you to write a little Python program to compute the Pearson correlation coefficient. If you really want to explore this stuff, many websites, like a good example is last.fm, basically allow you to download user scores, user ratings in the case of last.fm for songs, so you can start to explore differences between users. You can look in band space, you can, I guess, look in song space and user space, and you can use these ideas to go and see if that can predict things that other users or yourself might like. So lots of these, if you enjoy doing this sort of stuff, lots of these websites now have APIs that enable you to get this information. Okay. Do I want to say anything else today? I think let's summarize what we've done anyway. What we've done so far is to get this notion of a review of a kind of high dimensional review space and feature vectors in this space, and we've looked at two ways of measuring similarity, one based on the distance and one based on the correlation. And the Pearson correlation coefficient is in fact a much more robust way of measuring similarity than Euclidean distance. An interesting thing is, I don't know if you know about the Netflix challenge, it's finished now. There was a $1 million prize from Netflix for the team who could improve their DVD recommender system by basically 10% on the Netflix error measure, basically. Don't worry about 10% of what. And this turned out to be actually very difficult to do. A lot of people were working on this for about 2 years before it was finally won by a kind of fairly large collaborative group. And there are lots and lots of different things. So the systems that perform best in the Netflix challenge, the systems that perform best for recommendation in that case, were systems that incorporated a lot of different techniques and merged them together. But one of the interesting things is that there were some very simple things, and the Pearson correlation coefficient was one of them, which turned out to be an absolute must to use. So the Pearson correlation coefficient on that data, and the Netflix data was really quite large because Netflix get a lot of user ratings. It turned out the Pearson correlation coefficient was by some way the kind of most robust way to if you just wanted one way to measure similarity between items. Okay, so that'll do for today. The next two lectures, one will be on clustering, which is automatically grouping similar things together, and then the next one will start to look at classification. Can we assign things to their class?
So the correlation coefficient would be basically the one with the slope is where you have x and y. And but yeah, I think so.
Because if the slope is too big, if it's up, it's over one, then the
pixel
actually goes down.
Yeah, but then you can kind of swap. It's a symmetric measure, so you can kind of swap it over. If you see what I mean. So the slope's over one. If you swap the dimensions around, then that's right. So there's no correlation. You basically have a flat line with a zero slope. If it's anti-correlated, you go and have a minus one slope. And if it's positive, because it's correlated, you have a plus one slope. But it's a symmetric thing, right? You just multiply two things together, so it doesn't matter if you swap them around. I know what you mean. Most people prefer looking at graphs to numbers, but you're right. In this case, and it's always. It's always good whenever you see, particularly for things which are measuring distance of similarity. It's a really good thing to see if you go and swap the things around, will it still be the same? And it should be, but there are some very well motivated measures for which it's not.
They're not really distances.
They are distances. The distance has to be symmetric. But there are some things that are normally referred to as divergences. Exactly.
That actually makes sense. I mean.
Yeah. But it isn't symmetric.
It isn't symmetric.
That's true.